The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Booker Tov. Good, thank you, Howard. How are you doing today?
Yes, excellent, thank you. A terrible story that we have to start with, and one just can't make sense of this. A controversial case in Modi Inelit in Israel, where a Palestinian man has been arrested on charges of raping a Jewish child. The police have been forced to re-examine the case. Why are they re-examining the case? What's the story here?
Well, the whole story is that this young girl, a seven-year-old girl, has accused, I mean, came out and actually spoke to a school teacher claiming that she was inappropriately treated by a man who apparently was employed as a maintenance man at the school, the primary school that she attends in Modi Inelit, which is an ultra-Orthodox community. And this man was apparently someone who comes from an Arab village not far from Modi Inelit, but on the other side of the divide in terms of the Palestinian Authority area. So he's effectively a resident of the Palestinian Authority area and works in Modi Inelit as a maintenance person for the school, and apparently also moonlights as doing some renovations in private homes. The story says that apparently the girl claims that this man befriended her at the school, and then at some point actually took her away from the school after befriending her and seemingly grooming her, and took her and raped her at the home that of a private person where he was actually undertaking some renovations. And from what we gather, the claim is that there were other people, accomplices involved at the same time. And so the seven-year-old child came to her teacher and explained what had happened. And as a result of that, a man has been arrested. The particular man that she identified to the teacher has been arrested. However, there's now a lot of consternation about this case, because in the first instance, you know, there was even some question as to whether in fact the rape or the sexual molest actually took place on the basis of the evidence of a seven-year-old child. And also the question was whether the individual who's been arrested is in fact the correct person for this particular case. It seems like the police have not necessarily helped the cause in terms of doing a correct forensic examination. It seems like they've been a little remiss in doing the kind of forensic examination that one would expect in a case like this. And the child, the evidence of the child has been called into question. And so there are all of those things that are unfortunately things that go along with a case like this. You know, to what extent do we trust the sole evidence of the seven-year-old child when there seems to be no other supporting evidence around it? And at the same time, we can't simply just dismiss what the child is saying, because there does certainly seem to be some validity behind the claims that are made. Although, you know, the question is how much a seven-year-old can really describe in terms of exactly what has happened. But be that as it may, this person has now been arrested. The unfortunate thing for me, however, is that what is clearly a criminal act, if indeed all of this took place as has been described, is now becoming a nationalistic sort of issue, because of course the politicians from the right wing are labeling the rape act an act of terrorism, and of course it's being dragged into the whole nationalistic sphere in terms of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and how could it be that, you know, Palestinians are being allowed to work in Israeli schools and things like this being allowed to happen, when you know, we need to be a little bit more careful. So this is unfortunately something that's going to get some sort of a nationalistic label attached to it. And it's interesting that even some Palestinian reporters have come out saying that these things, if true, are very damaging to Palestinian society, and that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict cannot legitimize such a terrible and horrible crime. So there has been a lot of criticism from the Palestinian side. But the point is that they're saying, and I think with some justification, that it's a bit cynical to use this, what seems clearly to be a criminal act, as something which is related somehow to the conflict between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. And in fact, the rape and murder of Ori Ansbacher, which took place back in April in Jerusalem, was also being set up as some sort of a nationalistic act, some sort of an act of terror. And yet, in the end, the prosecutor that is prosecuting this particular case against a resident of Hebron has really labeled it a criminal act. So, you know, we need to be very, very cautious about mixing the two together. There are unfortunately criminal activities that take place in Israel, although I'm very pleased to say that the acts of criminal crimes like that are relatively low for the population that we have. So Israel is a relatively safe location, and you certainly see children out on the streets, young girls, young boys, till late at night and in the school holidays, and they're very, very safe indeed. That's one of the very nice things about Israel, is that children can really go out during the day and during the night without any problem, and parents don't have to schlep and carry them, and we don't feel concern for the safety of our children on the streets, even in the middle of the night and even, you know, in bad weather, and even when things seemingly could happen, we still feel that our children are quite safe on the streets. So that's a good thing. But I think that where there are criminal acts involved, I think we need to be very, very cautious about dragging in the whole nationalistic area and claiming that it's part of the conflict, when on this particular occasion it seems really to be about as far from the truth as one can find. But at the same time, obviously, we're definitely hoping that you know, the legal system will do its job here, first of all to extract the truth as to exactly what happened, and second of all to make sure that the right person is held responsible for any crime that might have been committed.
A message from Kathleen, and I was thinking exactly the same thing, Kathleen. Surely the child's been examined by a gynae, obviously in the presence of the parents, but it's a seven-year-old. I mean, I don't want to be too graphic, but one could determine if that child has been raped or not.
Right. So the public reports that I've seen haven't specifically spoken about whether the child was physically examined by a doctor or a gynecologist or any sort of thing. But there have been reports seemingly that say that, you know, whereas it would be logical, for example, for the child's underwear to be taken for a forensic examination, it seems like the police might have been remiss in not doing that and taking the evidence and, you know, at the time that it should have been taken. And now something like a week or so has passed, and I'm not quite sure whether any DNA or any forensic evidence might be able to be extracted from, you know, whatever the child was wearing at the time. So all of this is very, very unfortunate. And, of course, what also gets mixed into the whole situation here is the fact that the ultra-Orthodox community behaves in a slightly different way to the way that we would normally behave. I mean, you know, if one of our children, God forbid, was in that situation, we would go right away to the police and say, let's sort it out, let's report it, and let's get the evidence. But on this particular occasion, the family actually turned to a rabbi first to get an opinion before deciding to report it to the police. The rabbis are quite a well-known rabbi. They received an opinion from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and then he apparently convinced them to take it to the police, or gave his opinion that this should be done. And then since then, unfortunately, the family's also become a little bit embroiled with legal representation. Its original lawyer was fired, and they've now got a new lawyer. So there seems to be a lot of confusion on the side of the family of this child. And so, you know, that obviously doesn't contribute in any way to the case at all. But, you know, nonetheless, this is a very, very serious allegation. And of course, we feel a lot for the child and for the family. And, you know, if the, indeed this is what took place, doesn't matter whether the child was raped or not, but any inappropriate behavior towards that child, you know, we hope that the child is getting the appropriate attention and care that she needs.
Absolutely. What a terrible story either way. And, you don't even know what, it's just a really, really
shocking.
I mean,
the problem is that we don't really know what to believe at this stage, because there's such conflicting reports coming out. Some, you know, of the right wing press are really going out of their way to label this as an act of terror and
You know what, Anthony, there's tragedy here either way, because if a child of seven has made this up, there's a big story behind that. If she has, then it's a tragedy for the guy that's been falsely accused. If it's not false and if it is genuine, then it's just a tragedy, you know, on her side. And it's just a horrific, horrific. There's just no way that this, no way that this plays out that is actually even remotely okay. It's just a terrible, terrible story, unfortunately.
I absolutely agree. I mean, there's no way that this can turn out in a good way.
No.
Whatever happens, this is a bad story, whichever way you look
yeah,
at it.
100%. Prime Minister Netanyahu has appointed two new interim ministers of to his government. What are they? What are the details of these appointments?
Well, the Prime Minister has decided to appoint Rabbi Rafi Peretz and a member of Knesset Bezalel Smotrich to a ministerial posts, obviously on an interim basis, just to fill the stopgap until the next election. And of course, these are very, very controversial appointments, even if they are interim appointments, and even if those two individuals won't really have much influence at all over anything that goes on the various departments. But Rafi Peretz has been appointed as education minister and also a cabinet observer, and Bezalel Smotrich has been appointed as transportation minister, as well as a member of the cabinet. And of course, they will also sit on the security cabinet. And I think that therein lies the main significance of their appointment. Bezalel Smotrich is a very controversial figure. He really brings out probably the worst in most people. He's a very right-wing individual. And a lot of people in Israel have been dreading him becoming involved in any way in a senior position in government. And so this particular appointment, even if it's on an interim basis, does obviously send some indications as to what the Prime Minister might be thinking and might be inclined to do in the event that he continues to get the support that he got, Smotrich got from the elections. And of course, we'll see what happens after the election. And of course, Rafi Peretz is the one who took over the leadership of what was the Bennett Ayelet Shaked party beforehand. The Beit HaYehudi party now is headed up by Rafi Peretz, and he claimed that he was the rightful person to pick up the education ministry. We will recall that Naftali Bennett was previously Minister of Education. That post was awarded effectively to the Beit HaYehudi party and to Naftali Bennett. And when Naftali Bennett was fired a few weeks ago, Rafi Peretz called on the Prime Minister, saying that the right thing for him to do would be to appoint somebody from the Beit HaYehudi, was originally the party that was awarded this particular portfolio. And so, of course, it comes in the form of Rafi Peretz, who is the new leader of the Beit HaYehudi. But as I say, the main significance is really that they are members of the security cabinet. And so even though at the moment the security cabinet is not really discussing anything of major importance or having to deal with any significant issues, but if, God forbid, there is a sudden outbreak of hostilities and the security cabinet is called upon to take some very, very serious decisions, then these two individuals will clearly be part of those decisions.
All right. And finally, before we let you go, a major Air Force training exercise has been taking place in Israel this week. What lies behind this training?
Well, I think that this is just a pre-planned training exercise. Some people or some articles that I've read have been saying that the whole of the Israeli Air Force is in the air this week. So this is a very, very extensive exercise involving all types of planes and all ground activities. And it also is not only a training exercise in order to test Israeli Air Force's readiness to take on any hostilities that might arise, particularly in the north. And I think that most of the focus is really on that northern border. But also this exercise is about trying to just improve the coordination between the ground forces and the air force. And for the very first time, the F-35 Adir stealth fighter jet is taking part as well in Israeli Air Force formal exercises. Day and night activities are going on all of this week. So this is a huge exercise, really involving all parts of the Air Force. Every single aircraft, individuals have even been called up to reserve duty in order to take part in this exercise and make sure that the Air Force is as ready as possible. Of course, there have also been some enemy forces that have been put up against Israel, the Air Force, in order to just test the Air Force's responsiveness towards things that might be coming from Syria, from Lebanon, Hezbollah these days. is considered to be an army, even though they've been very involved in the Syrian conflict. And some people think that they might have been weakened by their involvement in the Syrian conflict. But in fact, Hezbollah is currently regarded as a terror army, as a renegade army that has even more resources and is even better than many of the national armies that are in place in the region. So we certainly can't underestimate the strength of Hezbollah. And I think that that's really what lies behind this huge Air Force exercise that's going on this week.
Absolutely makes sense to me. Time is almost 8 o'clock. Anthony Rauch, thank you as always. We'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow. Here's your news with Zanati.